You are listening to Faithless Brewing, a Magic the Gathering podcast focused on the modern format. Each week, we go deep on designing spicy new decks geared at tournament play. We put our creations to the test in competitive leagues and share our findings on the air. If you would like to support Faithless Brewing, please give us your feedback to help us grow and improve the show. You can find us on Twitter at FaithlessMTG or on the Modern subreddit at r/ModernMagic. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Welcome to episode 2 of the Faithless Brewing Podcast. My name is Dan Schriever, also known as Cave Dan on Magic Online. And joining me on the line, as always, are David Robertson and Damon Alexander. We've got an exciting show today, featuring a card that I am really excited to talk about. This is one of the most powerful cards from War of the Spark, and also perhaps one of the most underrated. I'm of course referring to Niv-Mizzet Reborn, the 5-mana 6/6 flying dragon that digs through time, or nivs through time, for the top 10 cards of your deck and lets you grab any number of 2-color cards, that is a card from each guild. So that's our build around for today. We're going to be trying to unlock the power of Niv-Mizzet Reborn. But before we dive into that, we start each show with a flashback to last week's deck. In our previous episode, we went deep on the card Neoform. We talked about a few different ways to use the card, and ultimately settled on an aggressive evolve strategy as the list that we would test and put through its paces by playing in some competitive leagues throughout the week. That's a deck that we are affectionately calling Bant Monkey Form. And so the first part of our cast is a report on how that testing went. We'll talk about what worked, what didn't work, where we felt the deck had strengths and weaknesses, cards that were performing or not performing, and some directions for hopefully developing that deck further down the road. That the reason why we have structured our cast in this way is because we're fundamentally a podcast about the deck building process. You know, we're here because we love to brew, we love the spice, but we're not interested in just jank for its own sake. You know, we are also hoping to develop something that is competitive, that you can take to a tournament and maybe have a realistic chance of success. And that means that what we need is practice, right? We need to actually put these decks through the gauntlet, as it were, take them through some leagues, and report back to you on how it actually went. Because at the end of the day, you know, the deck building process is all about iteration. You have that initial spark of creativity where you're drawing up all these wild ideas and everything seems possible. But that's just the first step. You then have to go back and sort of take stock of everything that you came up with and be a little bit honest with yourself, be your own harshest critic and say, you know what, maybe this was not a great idea. Maybe this isn't going to work. It's almost an exact analogy to the card Faithless Looting, which modern players know very, very well. Faithless Looting, you draw 2, you discard 2, and then you flash it back for that sweet, sweet value. And when you're done with that, you know, you've hopefully sculpted your perfect hand, and who knows, maybe even created something completely broken. So that's what we're going to be doing here on the Faithless Brewing podcast. We're going to have a card that we're sort of featuring each week, brainstorming some new deck ideas, some new deck sketches, and arguing through the merits of each of those. But then after the show, we're actually going to go ahead and play those decks and pick up with those same lists the following week to tell you all how it performed in actual matches. So for today, you know, we're talking about Niv-Mizzet Reborn, but we're actually beginning with Neoform, or rather Bant Monkey Form. And then next week's show will be our follow-up to the Niv-Mizzet Reborn episode, where whichever list we settle on today, we'll be able to report back with our testing results next week. So that's what we have on the docket for today's show. We have a flashback to the Bant Monkey Form deck, followed by a brewing session all about Niv-Mizzet. Now, just one final note before we get started. I think for many people, the deck building process is inherently a visual thing. It might be a little bit tricky to follow along through your headset. So to facilitate that, every list that we discuss today, and whether that's a fully developed 75 cards or just a sort of rough sketch of what we think a deck might look like, we will also post these. You can find them tweeted from our Twitter account, at FaithlessMTG on Twitter. And we will also have links to each of these decks in a Reddit post on the Modern Magic subreddit, that is r/modernmagic. That's also a place where you can find us, ask us questions about the deck, or give us feedback on the show. I'll do my best to respond. And hopefully we can all come up with something sweet. So without further ado, we're going to dive in, and I hope you enjoy the show.
All right, we are back. Last week, we discussed the many uses of a new card from War of the Spark, which is Neoform. And we decided we were going to run, I guess we call it Neo Evolve, Neo Monkey Grow. It was a Bant version with some updated card choices from a Teemer Evolve list that had seen a small amount of success maybe a year and a half ago. Right after we recorded, you guys and myself went through a league which we 5-0'd, and I think we were very pleasantly surprised by sort of the functionality of the deck, and additionally, sort of the theoretical sideboard plan of playing Neoform into these one or two of silver bullets, I think proved to be very effective, or do you guys agree with that assessment?
It works, I think, almost like how we'd drawn it up, like especially in the sideboard plan like you were referring to. It just so happened that the other Neoform shell that we've been talking about in the previous episode, the Neoform Allosaurus Rider Gristlebrand sort of degenerate turn one, turn two combo deck, was also just lighting the internet on fire at the time, so we got to crush that deck multiple times. It happens to be the case that if you just play any one drop and then Neoform into Lavinia, you basically win on turn two against that deck. So that was quite nice. That was like an angle that I just didn't expect to have in a kind of a simple, stupid green stompy deck like this.
Yeah, the turns out the Allosaurus Rider deck literally cannot beat a resolve Lavinia if it hasn't already resolved a Gristlebrand.
Ironically, they need their own Pongify in order to get out of the Lavinia lock. Yeah. Which is, I've seen some people playing that. So this is the new meta right now, Pongify and Neoform.
So after that 5-0, Dan, you took it through a couple more leagues, and then you took it to the top eight of a 1K. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, actually, I just decided to keep playing the deck because there were just a bunch of slots that I thought were, you know, flex slots that need a little more testing. So I ended up playing, I think, a total of five leagues. Took it to a 1K on Sunday. Made top eight there. I ended up losing in the quarterfinals. But yeah, the decks felt like really, really good. I think I'm 20-11 right now in competitive leagues and plus that 1K, so that's like a 65% win rate. It's not bad for a rough sketch that we've been hammering out together on the fly.
Yeah, and like you said, there's still a couple slots where you really can do whatever you want. Do you want to play, you know, six Pongify effects? Do you want to play removal main deck? How many evolve creatures do you want? How many two drops? How many three drops? Those are still, you know, how many lands? How many basic lands? There's a lot, you know, I think by the end you decided maybe Dryad Arbor wasn't worth it. So I think there's still a lot of play left, you know, in maybe the four or five slots that aren't sort of the core of the deck. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I've come around. I think, Damon, you were down on Dryad Arbor at first, and I didn't want to believe it, but I've come around that it's just better to have actual lands. So 21 lands, and all of them should produce green. I know that was something that we had gone back and forth on as well. So I think the mana base that I felt best with has just two green and white shocks and two blue green shocks, 21 lands total, no Dryad Arbor. And then I guess some of the tentative conclusions that I reached about the plan is that like there's only a handful of like actively good cards in the deck, right? There's Cloudfin Raptor and Experiment One are both very, very good. Stranglegeist and Neoform. Like, those four cards are like the, those are the best cards. Those are the ones you want to have in your opening hand. And the rest of the deck, like, is like the filler. Those are the pieces that sort of like round out the strategy, but like, those are not really the good cards. And I think that even extends to Young Wolf to some degree. Like, he's not as good as he used to be in sort of the original pre-Neoform shell, where you had to do like Young Wolf Pongify to get a good start. Like, you don't need that anymore. I guess like the fifth sort of hidden best card is the Elemental Token from the Voice of Resurgence, who's a little bit tricky to unlock, but he's like, that's the fifth best card.
When you're typically generating that token, is it a 4/4 or 5/5, a reasonable amount of the time, or?
Yeah, I think that's a good. You should think of it as starting at 4/4 and gets as high as 7/7 or 8/8.
And it is, you know, against control decks, you know, against Wrath of God, it's an insurance policy, so you can still attack the turn afterwards.
Yeah. Voice, like, you know, he used to be good. it's been a minute since Voice has been a good card, but I think this deck is finally sort of starting to realize some of his potential in a way that doesn't require them to just walk into it with a lightning bolt or something. Like, we're actively trying to like draw those elemental tokens out of the resurgence,
right?
Get them into the red zone.
But Voice is still, you think, a kind of couple of Stranglegeist, or sorry, Voice is a couple of Stranglegeist.
If Voice just started as an elemental token, like, yeah. If there was some way to like know that you were getting the elemental token, but because you have to work for it, it's like a cut below. Like, I think that the list that we started with last week only had three, and I think now I would switch. I would go 4 Voice and 3 Young Wolf. Like, if I were taking this to a tournament tomorrow.
Well, the proposed list had 4. I think we cut it down to 3 after we'd run through a couple leagues. But
oh, true. That makes sense.
I think this deck probably has a future. You know, if we wanted to play a tournament. Obviously, like we said, there's some flexibility in some of the slots where we've got one-offs, but, you know, I think we've shown that this deck is functional. It's capable of 5-0-ing, obviously. It's capable of beating the flavor of the month, you know, like a drum. And because you have these specific sideboard slots, you can kind of customize it to beat certain decks. If you knew for sure you got to play, you know, 4 or 5 decks, you could really customize your sideboard to be good against that.
Yeah, having access to a consistent 2-mana tutor really opens up a lot of sideboarding room and flexibility, similar to how Legacy Maverick plays Green Sun Zenith, which really helps make the deck flexible. This deck had a similar feel to it, having all these silver bullet cards. We took it in our first league, and we had interesting matching as humans, where we just sort of went bigger and wider than them. Cloudfin Raptor blocked Mantis Rider. They had a couple Champion of the Parish, but we eventually got a like 8-8 or 8/7 Avatar the Resolute, and then we attacked and traded off and played Renegade Rallier to bring him right back. And so we're going kind of as big and as wide as one of the premier tribal aggro decks in the format. Against Blue White Control, which was our next match, we wound up finding Gaddock Teague, and that kind of just shut off their Terminus lines, and it was kind of smooth sailing against a lot of these top decks.
I particularly like the match against, I think it was against Izzet Phoenix, where we led with a Experiment One, they happened to kill it. Then we had a Stranglegeist on turn 2, and then we Neoformed on turn 3 to get the Evolution Sage, played a fetch land, proliferated twice, and put 2 counters back on their thing in the ice.
Yeah, that was an interaction. That was an interaction I never considered because your mic wasn't working. I couldn't hear what you were saying. As soon as it happened, it was just so beautiful. Like, it was just one of those things where you just, it never occurs to you. I mean, what a sweet backdoor way. And then they just had no chance. I mean, the game was over. It was so beautiful.
Yeah, Sage, I've taken out a number of Aether Vials in the humans matchup with the Evolution Sage as well. Take those up to 4, and then they're just gone.
It also, you know, as it affects Chalice, which is not a card that has been played against us, but is a card that you could imagine someone bringing against us, because we have, depending on the build, 20 to 25 one drops. Very powerful there as well.
Damon, you said you saw some streamer had picked up the list the other day. Did you happen to catch that match? How did it do?
I don't think I saw the entire match. Actually, it was, so Caleb Durward was playing against the deck. Caleb was on the like the weird Conley blue deck or whatever that plays Narset plus random like both players loot effects. And the opponent was very like, seemed like a very good pilot. He kind of outplayed Caleb at a couple moments, and Caleb is definitely an excellent excellent player also. He just wasn't familiar with some of the interactions. Caleb casts a spell that returns all creatures with toughness less than your island count. His opponent goes and fetches Dryad Arbor, and all of a sudden his elemental tokens last.
And or engulf the shores.
engulf the shores. I'm not actually sure who took the match down. I had to get going before I could finish watching.
So you're saying that somebody else in parallel developed an identical deck to this?
No, this was the day after the 5-0 deck dump, so they were just playing our list from the 5-0 deck.
Oh, were we at, our deck actually showed up in the 5-0 dump?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they publish every list that makes 5-0 that is 20 cards different from another 5-0.
Oh, okay. I thought they just picked from a selection of decks that met that criteria.
No, I mean, I wrote about this deck on the Modern subreddit like 3 weeks ago, and you know, some people were interested, but I think they were all taking the wait-and-see approach, so I figured, you know, I'd do them a favor and like play it myself, try to get some results, try to show the way, lead the way.
Well, you can't argue. I mean, you know, on a certain level, you can't argue with results, although you don't want to be completely results oriented. But I mean, I think that the argument that this deck is functional is basically closed. The deck is good against certain matchups. It's great. And, you know, it's going to struggle in others. But I mean, it's another one of the sort of, you know, functional, very good, situationally great Modern decks.
Yeah, and just maybe I guess my takeaway right now is that I was expecting, based on my experience with like the original pre-Neoform list, that I would sort of win some games by a little bit, but also have like just get blown out in a lot of games. But what I found instead was that I win a good number of matchups in like a landslide victory, and that the ones that I lose, like, they're very close. Like, I feel like, you know, there are tough matchups. Creature matchups are tough, but like there's a lot of back and forth, and I never feel like I'm really out of it. Like the draws can be so fast now that you get the aggro sort of aggro draws can save you even from theoretically bad matchups, and like this deck has become a very good aggro deck with the addition of Neoform and then the Hate Bearer sideboard.
Dan, which matchups do you feel are the weakest? Which decks in particular?
I believe that the Humans deck has the most counterplay against this one, simply because they have a lot of Reflector Mages and a lot of Deputy of Detention post-sideboard and Phantasmal Images to get that back. That is a tricky matchup, and I believe that Black-Green is a tough matchup because they have a good number of cards that can break up your early starts with Discard or Fatal Push, and then they can just hold the fort with a Tarmogoyf until they get to a stage in the game where you suddenly have to answer their creatures like Scavenging Ooze, Kalidus, things like that are just like you don't really have the tools for that in the main deck unless you're willing to commit more slots to Path to Exile, which is something that, you know, I think we should consider, you know, if we keep tweaking the list. Like, is Path to Exile important enough to be a main deck card? Ditto for Spell Pierce. Like, that ends up being one of the most important cards out of the sideboard and like more of the unfair matchups. So what we have instead is synergistic cards in the main deck, like the Pongifies, the Hybridizations, or even the Sidisi's Faithful. Like, these cards work with our plan no matter what, but when you get to these tough matchups, you kind of want the more specialized interaction, like Path and Pierce. So I think those are the toughest matchups where you need like a cleaner kill, cleaner interaction.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've got a lot of data here, so, you know, like I said, there's a few slots that are still variable. Obviously, they can be tweaked a little bit to your metagame. You know, if you don't think you're going to see a lot of black-green, this is actually a pretty good deck. And like you said, Dan, like, because game one is just aggro, you're well-positioned to just steal games from decks that are theoretically better than you.
Yeah, I've won a lot of games on multi-5, even.
And, yeah. I mean, you can be attacking with three functional Wild Mikados on turn two, and then you can evolve them all again somehow with the right draw. So, I mean, that is a ridiculous opener.
Like, today I kept a 5-card hand that was Cloudfin Raptor, Sidisi's Faithful, and 3 lands. And my next two draws were Strangle Root, and I think maybe one other card, and I won that game very, very easily.
If it isn't clear, that this deck is also, not only is it actually pretty powerful, it's actually, like, really fun to play. Just has really interesting lines. You feel like you're winning with a bunch of like draft chaff uncommons. Sorry, experiment one. and yeah, it's worth taking for a spin if you haven't yet. And you feel like something fresh and modern.
And the ability to kind of pick that one 3-drop up that is the only card that matters, and you only play one on the deck, but we're playing the four Neoforms is really sweet. Like, it always feels like, oh, I just pulled the right card, but of course, you get to think about the entire deck, like, what might be the card that wins the game from this spot? And if you can solve that riddle, a lot of times you can do just enough before the opponent can do anything.
Amen. Absolutely.
All right. So, you know, I think that's a pretty good summary. We would recommend this deck to anybody. We'll be tweaking out maybe some options, maybe going back to Teamer with something we kicked around. There's obviously some other options. But this week we have some brews built around a new card also from War of the Spark. I'm going to let Dan take this away. When he mentioned it to me in an email, he said, hey, we should start brewing around Niv-Mizzet. I honestly thought he was referring to the blue, red card that was quite powerful in previous standard. I was trying to figure out a way to turbo it out or whatever. And he's like, no, the new Niv-Mizzet Reborn. And I really honestly at first blush thought that was like a joke. The first list you sent to me, I was really amazed just in how functional it seemed. You didn't have to cheat that much. Well, first we just assumed you could cast it on time. But you didn't have to cheat that many extra cards in there to make Niv-Mizzet actually seem like a powerful card at the top of the curve. But yeah, so Dan, what struck you about this card as modern playable? What about it like sort of appealed to you? I mean, you were on this card right away and you were pretty adamant that you thought it would be modern playable. And as we started to build shells, I started to get a little bit more convinced. But I'm curious about sort of what struck you as the draw to this card.
Yeah, I didn't realize its potential immediately. I kind of just glossed over it for it. I think it was there was a heavily downvoted post by an anonymous Reddit user who just asked, hey, is this card any good? And it actually had a well-written sort of sketch of like, you know, all you need is X number of hits and you get to draw, you know, on average, maybe 3 or more cards. And people were just laughing at this guy, like in the comments. They were so mean to him. They just, no one was interested. They said, can't you tell this is just a Timmy card for Commander? Like, you ever played Modern before? I tried to come to his defense, but, you know, at that stage, you know, I didn't have any decks in mind myself. I thought about it some more, and I had written another post, it was maybe a couple weeks ago, where I just listed some cards that I thought had good potential for Modern, and I listed Niv-Mizzet as my number one choice, as, you know, maybe the sleeper hit from War of the Spark that could be the most powerful card in the set, and I kind of stand by that. I listed Neoform as my number two card, but Niv-Mizzet I listed as my number one card, and predictably the haters just came out in force. I had to just write down some of these quotes. People said, you know, Niv-Mizzet is just bad, you know, 3 or 6 cards. Like, what color cards are you even think are worth running to get that effect? What kind of deck do you think that's going to be? 5-color, bad, painful midrange seems about as crap as you can get to make beefy Mulldrifter even decent. Similar things like that, you know. Someone says, you seem to have completely forgotten what Modern is actually like. 5 CMC, 5-color card that doesn't just outright win you the game is unplayable in Modern. It's a fun build around, but tapping out for it is a great way to just lose. Someone else says, Niv-Mizzet is terrible. It was clearly designed for Commander, etc., etc., etc. So, yeah, they, I feel like a great personal need to redeem this card now.
Okay, well, let's just describe what the card is. So it's rainbow. It's one of each color, 5 mana. For a flying 6/6 legendary dragon avatar. And when it enters the battlefield, you reveal the top 10 cards of your library. And then for each color pair, so for each Ravnica guild, you can choose a card that's exactly those colors. So it has to be exactly blue-red for the Izzet guild, exactly white-green for Selesnya, etc. If it's a 3-color card, you can't grab it. If it's a more than 3, you can't either. And so you can, if you're living the dream, get exactly 10, right? I mean, I think Frank Carson had some funny little thing, but you're saying this is just a sweet value card. You don't need to get 10 cards. You don't even need to get 5 cards. You're talking like a 5-mana 6/6 flying dragon that's drawing, what in your mind, what, 2 to 4 cards? And they're all spells, as a reminder, not Mulldrifters drawing you a land, you know, 40% of the time.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I think that this triggered ability of revealing the top 10 and getting, you know, potentially up to 10 cards, like, that just doesn't exist, right? That's not a card that we've ever seen before. It's like a dig through time and a half, like a dig through 10. Like, it's an amazing spell. If this were just on a spell, I might, you know, be intrigued by it. But then I say, I don't want to spend 5 mana just to draw cards.
Right.
But I mean, here I'm doing that. I'm also getting almost by accident a 6/6 flyer. It's kind of a mystery. Like, how much is a 6/6 flyer worth? Like, nobody knows because nobody plays those cards in Modern, right? Like, there's no incentive to build around a 6/6 flyer in Modern. And yet, I think that once you have this card in play, you start to realize that those are actually pretty good stats, and you didn't really pay extra for it.
Resistant to Fatal Push, resistant to Lightning Bolt. You know, those are the two cheap, quote-unquote, interaction spells. Cannot be Inquisition of Kozilek. Not as bad to get Path because we're a deck, obviously, that's relatively mana-hungry.
Yeah, so I think that what a lot of the skeptics were thinking is that, you know, it's a very restrictive build around, which is, I only partially agree with that, because he doesn't care what these spells are. All they have to be is two color. They can be attacking spells, they can be creatures, they can be counter spells, they can be removal, they can be whatever you need them to be. He just asks that they be two colors. I think like the three biggest requirements are that, one, he requires you to craft a game plan that allows you to make use of a 5-mana card, which granted, like, not many or not even most Modern decks attempt to do that, but they do exist, right? Mid-range control, ramp. These decks do exist, and that's probably where you'd be looking for your starting place. The second thing you need is some kind of mana base that is plausible. And again, that's kind of uncharted territory for Modern. Like, there are no 5-color Modern decks, mainly because there is no incentive to play 5-color, but I do believe it can be done. And then the third thing you need is to figure out, like, which two color spells are you going to be filling the deck with. And that, I thought, would be the easiest part. That's actually a little bit tricky because, you know, Modern tends to prefer cheap spells, one mana spells, single colored one mana spells. Those are the Modern staples, right? When you get to two colored cards, like, you get a lot of good sideboard cards, and some of the all purpose main deck cards are a little bit, it's hard to, like, pick a full list of two-color cards that you for sure want to put in your main deck. But again, I believe that can be done. So those are kind of like the three puzzle pieces to make a new Mizzet deck. And I think that sort of the way you answer one of those questions, like, what mana base am I going to use? Or, you know, exactly how am I going to use this 5-mana card? Am I going to ramp into it? Or am I going to play more of a leisurely control game? How you tackle each one of those will dictate how you answer the other two parts of the puzzle. To come up with a coherent plan. In terms of sort of like where this would most likely, what's the best comparison for Niv-Mizzet? I think that some people were getting hung up on this idea that for 5-mana you should be winning the game. And I would say that Niv-Mizzet does win the game at 5-mana. I think, well, we'll throw that other question mark for now, but I would say that you should build your deck in such a way that he does win you the game, in a similar way to how Primeval Titan from in an amulet deck sort of wins, in quotation marks, the game. The first Titan you play, the idea behind amulet is that the first Titan you resolve will allow you to set up an overwhelming board state, whether that's just fetching up, you know, a Tolaria West to get another Titan so you have endless Titans, or whether that's actually like immediately getting in with a hit with Slayer Strongholds to like actually win the game. Like the amulet Titan deck, you know, it's sort of a functional win when you resolve your first Titan. And I think that Niv lives in a sort of similar place, though he's not a combo card. He's actually he's closer to Teferi out of blue-white.
Yeah, I was actually saying Teferi and like Thragtusk are cards that we occasionally see in their various shells that are just straight 5-drops that are gaining you incremental value. And I think we've seen Thragtusk's reign fade away because that 5 life is not actually worth a card against a lot of decks. So it's not really a good value 5-drop in that sense. But Teferi draws you a card every turn and functionally casts, only costs 3 the turn he comes into play. But because, like you're saying, the dragon can draw 3 or 4 cards reasonably the turn it comes into play and is a win condition on himself, you have to answer that 6-6 pretty quickly. In Modern, it's really a 3-turn clock to just beat people down. The more you started to talk to me about this, the more sense it made. And there's a few cards that you pointed out that we kind of found that kind of turned me into a believer. From a sort of a doubting Thomas, I started to feel the hole in Jesus' side. I didn't see it when you first talked about it. I literally thought this was a waste of time. But we started to find some cards that actually, and they wouldn't all go in the same deck necessarily, but there's different builds of Niv-Mizzet that I think lend themselves to using Niv-Mizzet in a way that you don't really have to bend that much for, and then it becomes very attractive.
Yeah, so tell me what cards have sort of helped
you. So the mana fixing cards that were very attractive to me are Quest for the or Safe Right Quest, which is a it's a green white sorcery that finds a forest or plains card, so it can find dual lands. That's important. So that's that shrinks your deck. It's another hit for Niv-Mizzet. Not that at 5 mana it matters that much, but it's just another card you can find. And Manamorpho. So those are both cards that functionally shrink your deck, that help your fixing early in the game and smooth out your draws. And they're hits for Niv-Mizzet. So already you're not having to bend that much. And they both are base green if you want that to be a thing. And then going up the chain, a card that I was very interested in is Nidhogg Reliquary. It is exactly green-white, and it takes you from 3 to 5, and it fetches any land in your deck. So the turn after you get to untap with Nidhogg Reliquary, it's reasonable to assume you would have 5 mana some large percentage of the time. And it's a card that Niv-Mizzet finds. And then at 5 mana, Bring to Light is a card that pays you off for playing all 5 colors. It's a card that Niv-Mizzet can find, and this is a card that you've been advocating, and I think it's really shows what you're talking about. It allows Niv-Mizzet to find another Niv-Mizzet if that's what you want, or find any sideboard card. And so it leads to these chaining Niv-Mizzets where every Bring to Light finds functionally a Niv-Mizzet plus 4 to 5 other cards. And it just sets up this chain reaction where your opponent can't possibly compete with a card advantage, but because you're also finding a 6/6, you're ending the game quite quickly. So you don't have to find a way to affect the board with all your cards. The spell that's drawing them all is a 6/6 flyer.
Yeah, I think that specific Bring to Light interaction is where there ends up being this weird parallel to Primeval Titan, because you will never get 2 in play at once, but you will have as many 6/6s as you want, because each Niv finds another Bring to Light.
Hopefully.
Or it finds a Colgan's Command, if you put that card in your deck, so you rebuy the Niv.
Yeah,
so you could build a deck, yeah.
It's what we call the Squadron Hawk effect, where Amulet Titan gets his squadron up and running, and Niv-Mizzet also gets his squadron of himself.
Exactly.
Legendary rule being the one trick.
The squadron of himself.
Well, you don't need 2 Niv-Mizzets in play because it's so big.
Well, you kind of want to you want to cast it sometimes, actually, just for the trigger. You get so much value from it resolving. But what's nice is that actually multiple Bring to Lights are still useful, because especially coming out of the sideboard, you'll generally have a lot of random hate bears in your deck that you can then use the second Bring to Light to go dig up. Notable exceptions being Rest in Peace. Graphicus Cages I found out the hard way in one league, because Bring to Light only brings back creatures, instants, or sorceries. But if you're playing as a matchup and you're like, oh man, I need to find my Camball to stop him from going off, or my Lavinia, or any number of cards, then you can use your... Right, Unmoored Ego. All these cards you can go get with Bring to Light.
Oh, and I forgot another card, Neoform, which is another card that Dan recommended, which also was intriguing. It's a 2-color card again, so Niv-Mizzet finds it, and it can allow you to cast Niv-Mizzet even a turn ahead. So you could sacrifice a 4-drop to find Niv-Mizzet, or you could sacrifice a 3-drop to find a 4-drop to find, or to get back your spell, etc. So. Yeah, there's just a lot of cards that happen to sort of work well with Niv-Mizzet's trigger that allow you to play Niv-Mizzet without too much of a penalty, and the Bring to Light, exactly like you guys are describing, leads to this cascading effect where resolving Niv-Mizzet is not just 4 random cards, it's functionally, you're going to have a Niv-Mizzet in play every turn for the rest of the game.
Yeah, Neoform is a very interesting one. I was initially very high on that, and I think I've kind of come around that Bring to Light is more consistent, but I think what drew me to Neoform initially was this idea that, you know, I don't want to necessarily tap out for the 6/6 flyer, like the non-believers were saying. But like with Neoform, you've already had your 4-drop in play. When you cast Neoform, you'll still have mana left over. So you'll get your 6/6 flyer, you can cast some spells. That requires a very different deck construction, like one that actually has 4-drops that you can get rid of. But there are intriguing options there too. I mean, I've been advocating Bloodbraid Elf. I know, Dave, you're skeptical of that. You prefer Hot Master of the Fells. But there are options there. I think a Hostage Taker has been a useful 4-drop. Falcon Wrath Aristocrat is one that I've tried.
I think those are the only 3, honestly. Or 4 if you want to include Bloodbraid Elf. I actually don't think there are that many interesting options. You could even play the new 2-3 guy that gains life and draws cards, but I think he's bad.
Oh, I don't like him.
Yeah. So I actually think there aren't that many options at four, but those are all reasonable options at four. So you and they are in, some of them are in guilds that actually you find a hard time finding other useful cards for. So, you know, there's not a lot of Dimir cards you want to play necessarily. So Hostage Takers is nice. The other thing we should maybe talk about, and I can't actually speak to it, is the math involved with how many hits you need. You know, the having one of every guild versus having, you know, 10 Selesnya hits or something. You know, the, as those numbers shift, it changes the math on your expected return on Niv-Mizzet. We haven't set up the Niv-Mizzet calculator yet, but what's a good rule of thumb that people can use when they start building some of these shells, Dan?
So someone had tried to do the math, and I think they came up with actually a sort of shockingly low number. They said you only needed like 18 cards that were eligible to be hit by Niv if they were well distributed, and you would still get 3 cards per Niv. I want more than 3 per Niv, so I've been playing closer to 24 hits in most of my sketches. I feel like if you have 24 hits that are reasonably well distributed, so you know, no more than 6 in one guild, let's say, then yeah, you'll draw, just sort of based on my testing so far, you'll draw an average of 3.5 cards per Niv.
And we do want to always repeat, these are not, you're not drawing 3.5 cards, you're drawing 3.5 spells, which is, yes, which is a thing that people forget sometimes, I think. Oh, I'm only X cards. It's like every third card that you draw from the top of your deck is a land, so much more powerful than a draw 3.
And some of my best builds of this so far, best performing ones, they've had closer to 27, 28 hits. So,
And the way you've been able to get those hits so high is because you're playing cards like the Safe Right Quest.
Exactly, yeah. Just using those as land slots. So if you're sort of keeping a running tally in your head, so let's say there were 24 hits, some number of Niv-Mizzet, which he is not a hit on himself, and then, I don't know how many lands, let's say 25, 26 lands are actual lands. Some of those can be replaced by Safe Right Quest. You still have room for some non-hits. And I think those are the slots where you want to figure out how to spend them the most effectively. I think that there's sort of two directions you would go. One is you would say, I want to accelerate in those slots. You know, Birds of Paradise being maybe Noble Hierarch. Or you could say, I just want to not die with those slots, in which case Inquisition of Kozilek, Thoughtseize, Path to Exile, Fatal Push. Just your cheap plays, you know, your most efficient plays are going to be one mana, single color spells. That's what you want to do with those non-hit slots.
I do think if we're going to talk about ramp, we should mention Lotus Cobra. You know, one of the ramp shells that you and I had talked about had a Lotus Cobras in them. And I think it's just a natural card when you think about we're going to have to play some amount of fetch lands to find all these colors. And Lotus Cobra is just a natural. If you play a Lotus Cobra turn 2 and it lives, and you have a fetch land on turn 3, it can cast Niv-Mizzet a very high percentage of the time. So that's another possibility, along with Bird of Paradise. Those are two cards that commonly can make what we call rainbow, any of the 5 colors, to help you cast your Niv-Mizzet. But as Dan points out, those are mono green, so they can't be found by Niv-Mizzet, and they are vulnerable to other creature removal. So that's kind of the ramp shell, those cards. Yeah. Or Noble Hierarch, like you say, or, you know, Utopia Tree here.
I think so. Other cards that ramp that actually happen to get hit by Niv, I've been happy with. The new Domri and the new Kiora, both from War of the Spark, just happen to be interesting hits that can ramp you. So if you start with a Birds of Paradise or a Hierarch, you can then play one of those two new Planeswalkers on turn 2, and then you'll have 5 mana the next turn.
Kiora is 2 and a hybrid green-blue, so it's 3 mana. It comes into play with 7 loyalty. Whenever a creature with 4 power or greater enters a battlefield on your side, you get to draw a card. And then it minus 1s. It has no positive ability, but it can remove a loyalty to untap a permanent. So it can untap a Bird of Paradise, like Dancing, or whatever land. So it functionally makes a mana in that way. And then Domri's plus ability adds a red or green. Is that correct, Dan?
It is. And that actually randomly has the text that once you add the mana, your creatures cannot be countered this turn. So,
right.
I mean, that, you know, is weirdly a concern. Like, if you're building a deck that is actually planning to win with Niv-Mizzet, you know, you don't want them to just, like, you don't want to just have them get countered. So don't really just randomly gets around it.
One of the concerns, you know, normally when you want to cast a creature and have it resolve, there are lands that tap for any color that can cast dragon. You could pick dragon on some of these tribal cards, but then it's important to point out you can't cast any of your other multicolor cards. So though that's not really a good option for this kind of deck.
True, true. So yeah, we should maybe talk about the mana base options, because I think that would be like another sort of key question, is just sort of conceptualizing how you're going to go about like tackling the Niv-Mizzet deck. So before there was ever like Unclaimed Territory, there was this card Pillar of the Perrins from the original Ravnica block. You know, the Perrins, like Niv-Mizzet, the original Perrin. It's all coming together now. This is his long con, right? You get all these terrible Niv-Mizzet cards over the years, and like finally, ultimate Niv-Mizzet will maximize Pillar of the Perrins. So that is a great land for this kind
of... No Niv-Mizzet has been terrible, just real quick. They've all been very good.
The first one was bad.
The first one was amazing!
You had to tap him. He's a 4/4, you had to tap him. Come on. Was he amazing? You couldn't even attack with him. The second one was at least let you attack with him.
You don't have to draw the card.
Anyway, yes, there have been many Niv-Mizzet over the years. This is the best one. I want to believe. So, Pillar of the Perrins.
I mean, one of them won a GP, Dan. That's a pretty high mark to live up to.
Yeah.
Well, which one is this? The previous one?
Niv-Mizzet Perun in Standard. He just got control.
Yeah.
GP Milwaukee, I think. GP Madison.
That card.
I think it was Madison. Yeah.
Cars a heck, not interested. Six mana.
Anyway, so back to mana. So Pillar of Perrins taps for any color of mana if you're going to cast multicolor spells.
Correct. So that exists sort of in the Unclaimed Territory, Cavern of Souls slot. Similarly, Ancient Ziggurat, if you were going to build a deck that was mostly creatures, that's a little bit awkward with Bring to Light, but if you decided that you were going to fill your deck primarily with just old creatures and like Birds of Paradise and Hierarch, you could have a mana base that had, say, Pillar of the Perrins, Ancient Ziggurat, Reflecting Pool, and like Mana Confluence would be 16 of your land stops. That's a mostly painless mana base that can cast most of your spells.
But you can draw the cards out of order because Ancient Ziggurat does not cast any of the other spells, but Pillar of the Perrins cannot cast Bird or Lotus Cobra or Noble Hierarch.
Correct. Yeah. So like that.
So there's some awkwardness inherent in that painless mana base. Let's just.
Yeah. And it puts a lot of pressure on your remaining land slots to be able to cast whatever interactive spells you wanted to use, whether that was discard or removal or something like that.
Right.
Another option is to go with a Shock Fetch mana base. And one thing that I've had good success with so far is using the Safe Right quest, the card that you were talking about, Dave, which can fetch shock lands, right? It says a forest or a plains card. So that can grab any green or white aligned shock. So I've had good results with a mana base that uses a Safe Right quest and just Windswept Heath, and having all my other lands just be green and white aligned shocks. And then you still have room in the mana base for Pillar of the Perrins and like maybe Mana Confluence or just regular lands besides that. That mana base has worked fairly well. I think the third mana base you could try to build would be a Knight of the Reliquary mana base that, is trying to use Knight as one of your sort of core ramping components. And there you'll need Forest and Plains. So it's kind of similar considerations as the Safe Right quest plan, but you'll need sort of some redundancies in which shocks you have available, because you'll have to be sacrificing some of them.
So yeah, I think there's kind of like four ways to build this, and we'll post all these deck lists so people can take a look at them. And they're certainly not finished, but I think you can build a Neoform list, and I think we're a little down on that, Dan and you and I, just from thinking about it. But you can play Neoform with Voice of Resurgence and Kitchen Finks up through Huntmaster of the Fells to get your Niv-Mizzet. That's a way to build the deck. You can play a gold color Niv-Mizzet deck that's a lot of creatures, right? So you can play like Tide Hollow Sculler is a card that you found, Dan, I thought was a great call, that rewards you for playing Ancient Ziggurat and Pillar of Perrins, right? So it hits both of those. It is disruption early. You can play Kiora's Follower, which does that as well, which is also a ramp spell. I thought that was a really cool idea. So that's a really creature-heavy build. You can also build like a turbo ramp version, like you're talking about, that has Lotus Cobra, Bird of Paradise, and Knight of Reliquary with that kind of green-white mana base maybe the Niv-Mizzet isn't quite as powerful in that deck, but you have sort of a built-in just ramp deck. And then you have a spells deck that you've actually already played to a 5-0. Spoiler alert to all the kids out there. And I know, Damon, you kind of jumped in the middle of that league, so I kind of want to hear your guys' impressions from the actual, you know, real-world testing here. This isn't just theory crafting during lunch break. This is some hard data.
Yeah, Dan asked me to help him finish out a league because he had to run to dinner or something. And so I logged into his account, or like I said, the Motivileo. I logged into ours. I don't know.
I deliberately did not tell you what deck I was playing.
Oh, I didn't realize that. So you just grabbed it.
Yeah.
Okay. You thought so I was playing the Monkey Form deck. So.
Yeah, so like before I press find match, I better just take a look at the tweaks he's made to our Monkey Form deck. I was like, what is going on here? How do I play this deck? And I started looking through the list, and basically it comes down to the following. It has Niv-Mizzet Reborn, as we've discussed. It has four Bring to Light. It has four Pillar of the Perunes, and then a bunch of Fetches and Shocks. And then green it just has a bunch
aligned,
of...
Right? They're all green and white aligned, yeah.
Right, right. Windswept Heath, Safe Request aligned. And then it has a bunch of basically five-color control cards, which includes Inquisition of Kozilek, Assassin's Trophy, Counter Squall, Is It Charm, Lightning Helix, Colgan's Command, and then a few random other ones. And I joined the league. Dan had already won the first three matches, and I was like, oh, there's a lot of pressure with this deck. I don't know what's going to happen. And I wound up facing 8-Rack, and it seems like a tough match. Liliana the Veil was a little tricky, but once you get the first Niv-Mizzet resolved, the game just ends. I mean, first off, you're almost guaranteed to get another Bring to Light. I don't know what the odds are exactly, but in a 60-card deck, looking 10 cards deep is, like, pretty far. And so then if your first Niv-Mizzet dies, you just cast another one. We had a bit of a dance once where I was like, Niv-Mizzet, and they were like, Liliana, kill it. And I was like, okay, well, Niv-Mizzet, and they were like, Liliana, kill it. And they had to lose to Liliana this time. And then I go, Niv-Mizzet, they untap Liliana, kill it. And then by that point, I had like six cards or like eight gas spells in hand and didn't really need to keep going the dragon way. Yeah, and the deck was actually pretty delightful once you turn the corner. The second match was against the kind of Waste Knot deck, also pretty heavily discard based.
Yeah, that was against the streamer Demi Eyes, who just plays Waste Knot Brews all the time. I watched your replays, Damon, afterwards. And...
Are these Waste Knot Brews like pretty good, or
he basically runs the Waste Knot Discord, and he plays a different shell almost every week. So even he will admit that many of them are unplayable. But I think he's dedicated to the cause of exploring every possible home for Waste Knot.
Maybe we should have a Waste Knot week and we can team up with him.
Absolutely. I'd be down for that. So pick your five favorite Waste Knot brews. But sorry, Damon, you were saying, go ahead.
Yeah, and then the sideboard features a pretty flexible package, mostly kind of in the Humans Hate Bear style, just because those happen to be guild aligned, such as Izzet-Adacaster, Kambal, Knight of Autumn, a Fracturing Dust, a new Ashiok Dream Render, Lavinia, Azorius Renegade, and then a few other hits, such as a Graphic's Cage and Rest in Peace to round it out. And the deck felt quite solid. I mean, basically you're playing this cool five-color control deck. One of my hesitations was once I really need to fetch a Steam Vent, and it just isn't in there thanks to this white-green aligned dual land philosophy. Just because the way the mana works out, sometimes you just need to have, that's like you're missing colors. You have to really pay attention to your land sequencing and what you're fetching to make sure you're always on track for five colors and don't have any redundancy. Just my one quick comment is I'm not sure about the Birds of Paradise plan in the sense that if your deck only has one creature that is killable by Lightning Bolt and Fatal Push, it will get killed by Lightning Bolt and Fatal Push a lot of the time. And this deck has basically just these birds, and so they are literally always going to die. So I wonder.
They know what their job is.
It's to make, I kind of like it though. So are they going to keep that in after board though? Are they just keeping in Lightning Bolt and Fatal Push after board in case you have four birds still?
I mean that's true, but I mean, still, it kind of just sucks to go Birds and they bolted, and he's like, oh, his hand is no longer that good. That's why I was wondering if we could play a card like Sylvan Caryatid or whatever. It seems like it might do a similar job.
Oh, that's a card I was trying to think of when I jokingly said Utopia Tree. But I was joking when I said that, but again, everything I think is a joke becomes all too real.
I forgot about him, actually.
I think the important thing to note is that because Niv-Mizzet gives you so many cards, you'll notice when you look at these deck lists, a lot of the spell-based or control-based two-mana cards are very cheap because you need to play cards early in the game to stay alive to cast your 5-drop. And then once you cast your 5-drop, you want to turn those cards into effects on the board or effects on your opponent's hand. You want to start trading them for resources because you have so many. So I love cards, you know, like Counter Squall is a Charm, Lightning, Helix. Those cards are often trading for things that cost more mana, Assassin's Trophy. And it really helps you catch back up in the tempo sense because you are tapping out for a 5-mana creature. But, you know, because you have the Spring Delight, you have the access to so many sweepers because you function get to play 5 Supreme Verdicts. That's awesome. You had Kaya's Wrath in the first version you sent to me, Dan. Was that just too tough on the mana? Or
it was. That was, much too hard in the mana.
A bridge too far?
I really wanted a second Orzhov card to, like, improve my Niv-Mizzet odds, but it was not worth it.
Yeah.
Too hard to make black, white, white. Time Wipe is one that I've considered. It may be more useful.
A new card, so you'd say what that is.
Time Wipe is a 5-mana Wrath. It destroys all creatures, but before you do that, you get to return one creature you control to your hand. So whether that's a bird or a bird.
It could be a 6 or 7 or 8 for one.
That's one I think would be worth testing. But yeah, I think also the other thing you might be thinking as you're just listening to us describe this shell is that it just sounds like a completely random pile of interactive cards that have no coherence to them. And that is true. That is by design. I think, Damon, what you were saying, where you looked at the list and thought it seemed hard to play, I think probably what you found was that it was actually very easy to play, like, just because Niv-Mizzet is so powerful that you don't really need to do anything. You just need to not die. He's kind of like this easy button. Like, once, if you've gotten to the point where you're casting him and you're not dead yet, like, you just refilled your entire hand, and, like, the game is functionally over. Like, it's going to continue for a few turns. They'll kill maybe the first 2 Niv-Mizzets, but the game is over. And that's why, like, this list that will be on the 5-0 list tomorrow has what seem like, you know, random deck. Like, there's an Unmoored Ego in the main deck because, you know, that's not good in most matchups, but, like, there's room for dead cards like that if it helps you, right? If it helps you survive, like, the more unfair matchups, you know, you have Bring Delight to find it. It's there for that reason. I think those cards like that are worth it. Like, there's a random mix of removal and counter spells and discard. It's all over the place. But I think it's almost more like just like the concept that, you know, all we're trying to do here is just not die, and then we'll just let Niv carry us to victory. And it works surprisingly well. The other matchups that I played in that league were against Tron, played against Death Shadow, and the third matchup escapes me. But they were like real decks. Yeah, it went basically the way that you would expect it to go. Like, I just tried to answer their first few things, and the dragon killed them.
Do you like Crumble to Dust more than like the 2/2 that sacrifices to destroy a non-basic land, which is also a Rakdos hit for Niv-Mizzet? Just Crumble to Dust is more powerful because you're going to bring Delight forward. Is that the thought there?
That was my thought, although I'm not convinced by this plan. I think Tron is still a hard matchup because you actually are hard pressed to deal with them dealing 20 damage before they hit natural 6 lands. It's easy enough to stop them from assembling Tron with cards like Crumble to Dust or Unmoored Ego, but still, it's still hard to actually kill them before they get to their Wurmcrawl Karn mana. So you still need to, like, rely on your counter spells, that kind of thing. I think Fulminator is one of those cards that is. It's a 2-color card that's just absolutely awesome in Modern, in just sort of the broader format. So if I were building a more creature-based Niv-Mizzet deck, that would definitely be like a 3 or 4 of in a sideboard, or maybe even in the main deck. Because again, I think, like, you know, if you're building your deck in a way that Niv is going to be hitting you 3+ cards each time, like, you can afford to have slightly worse. The rest of your cards can be a little more specialized, a little more random.
This is another reason why I've been advocating for Is It Charm, and I was glad to see that you played too, because it also is a looting effect. So in games where its counter ability isn't good, like you say, you can filter away your Unmoored Ego against humans or whatever and find whatever, the next card that is good.
That was a great suggestion. I'm very glad that I followed your advice on that, because Izzet Charm was great. So that is the sort of the spell-based control version, but I want to go back and just sort of talk more about these creature-based versions, because I think those might actually be the ones that are even more dangerous. Like this spell-based version is almost like, I think it was a proof of concept, and it's slow and ponderous. It's very much like a blue-white control that happens to be five colors. But these creature-based versions, what I really like about them is that I think historically the reason that the green-white X decks have just not been very good in Modern is because once you're starting your deck off with, 21 or 22 lands plus some mana dorks, maybe Nether Reliquary for more mana dorks, like that's a lot of mana in your deck, and you don't have that many slots left to actually win the game. And those decks have traditionally tried to use cards like Collected Company or Bloodbraid Elf to, at least have some semblance of card advantage or powerful starts. And both of those cards come with their own set of restrictions. So yes, Niv is restrictive as well, but like he's much more forgiving. Like once you cast him, I think he's much better than Collected Company in terms of like how much he draws you. So I think that he has the potential to.
It's not even close. Collected Company would kill to have the ability that Niv-Mizzet did. If that card was printed like that, you'd have to cancel Modern.
So, yeah, I know you're not a fan of the company, Dave. I happen to still like the company, but yeah, I don't need to convince you, Dave, that company is worse than Niv, is it? But I think that the existence of a card like Niv can kind of breathe new life into a creature-based ramp deck, and that it's no longer at risk of getting attritioned out of the game or running out of gas because it draws too much mana and not enough business.
Would you agree that if you're going to play a creature-based ramp deck, you probably need to build it around Knight of the Reliquary, since it is a hit for Niv-Mizzet and it does take you naturally from 3 to 5? Or do you think there's other ways to build it that wouldn't involve Knight of the Reliquary?
I think you've got some great suggestions here. So I think I do not think you have to play Knight of the Reliquary. So no, I do not think it has to be. I think that actually Knight creates a lot of stress on the mana base that I'm not quite sure how to solve yet.
Doesn't it kind of go along with your white-green? I mean, isn't it sort of requiring the same thing that your spell... I always forget the name of this card. Spell, right?
Safe for hit.
It's not a Modern staple yet. I'm not yet familiar with the title. But it doesn't it sort of require the same things that Safe Right Quest does? A lot of forests or plains?
Yeah, it does. But I think with Safe Right Quest, I feel confident just putting like one of each of the lands that I anticipate searching for. With Knight of the Reliquary, you have to sacrifice something. And whenever you sacrifice something, you're like, will I be able to still have my mana intact after I've sacrificed this land?
Right.
That would require a little more thought, I think. So I don't think Knight is the only option. Like, I think that starting with birds and perhaps Cobra or Hierarch or Caryatid or whatever, like that might be enough in terms of the creature ramp package. In terms of other 3-drop accelerators, I really do like Domri and Kiora and Knight as well. I think I've tried Dragon's Horde. It's kind of a silly card. It's like, we could play Chromatic Lantern, but I actually wanted to draw another card, so tried Dragon's Horde. That was okay. I think there's still options. Then again, like you can get there with Neoform. So if you're willing to play 4-drops, you don't necessarily need to be casting the Niv. Like you can just Neoform for it with a 4-drop. In that case, you wouldn't necessarily have to have Knight of the Reliquary, although I think you could. But I would probably build that deck with 4 Bloodbraid Elf and then a good chunk of 3-drops. So it would be like the classic, on 1 mana, I want to play a mana creature. I want to have a lot on 3 mana. And then I want to have like a 4-drop like Bloodbraid that maybe gets me another 3-drop. And then I want to be Neoforming the Bloodbraid away.
So you'd sort of be playing that kind of classic Naya shell where often Bloodbraid Elf has been the card advantage engine on top, but you'd have a separate package in where you'd be Neoforming to Niv-Mizzet for another 3 or 4 cards to kind of refill your hand if that initial aggro start got stopped.
I think that would be like the hope. We have to see whether that works out in practice. It is possible that you're right, that Bloodbraid is just not as good as I want him to be. um,
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, like, all these shells, even their first shell that we're not even talking about that you sent to me, like, that's the thing that made me a believer. Like, you only had to tweak a few cards to really... I think it had Grim Flare was a black-green spell. It played the blue-black artifact that is cycled a lot in Grim Flare shells to try to help with Delirium. For your hits. Yeah, thank you. You only had to do a few of those things, play 4-mana Morphos. Like, all of a sudden, you just get a reasonable amount of value out of Niv-Mizzet. The Grim Flare, in theory, is like, you know, kind of scrying away cards to help either find your land drops if those are needed or to find Niv-Mizzet once you kind of get to your five. Even that, which I think we've kind of improved on as we iterated some lists as we swapped emails, it was surprising how much you didn't have to... It wasn't crazy where you needed your perfect draw to cast Niv-Mizzet and then you had to cross your fingers you're going to get enough value out of them. You know, once you start putting 20 hits in, I mean, it's really powerful.
Yeah, I think that that list, maybe we can post that list too. I'll add it to the post. But that started off as just a black-green deck where I was already playing Grim Flayers and Tarmogoyfs. And, you know, I had liked Architects of Will as a card to enable Delirium and unable to traverse the Ylvenwall. So the reason that deck can still look like a black-green deck is because it only actually has to play a couple of copies of Niv and then traverse the Ylvenwall and can find it when the situation is appropriate. I think probably the biggest concession you have to make is that, you know, instead of playing a bunch of copies of Liliana of the Veil at 3 mana, you end up playing a more diversified, colorful Planeswalker suite. Like, I think you want to play Kaya for a black-white hits. I'd probably throw in Kiora. And I think in that shell, like, maybe I might end up adding Birds of Paradise and maybe another Reliquary as well, instead of just having my turn one play only be discard. So yeah, I think that kind of sketch just sort of took us on the path towards more of like a mana ramp deck. But yeah, the concept of just playing like a regular, pretty normalish black-green deck that happens to also be technically 5-color because of these sort of cheaty hits like Architects of Will and Metamorphos, like I think that's still very strong.
Yeah, so I mean, I think, you know, like we said, there's a lot of shells out there. There's a lot of testing to be done because the way you have to build your deck really involves a lot of one or two of. So this deck is very customizable. Like Dan is saying, you can build your deck to not die. You can build your deck to turbo out Niv-Mizzet in a variety of ways. And that's what we'll be trying out this week. We already have a 5-0. That's in the books. To quote Yogi Berra, you can look it up. There's, you know, you can't really fuck with that. But yeah, I think we'll have a lot of fun, you know, seeing if we can Lotus Cobra down and visit on turn three. Hopefully get some salty comments in the chat about little kid luck. And any closing thoughts from either of you gentlemen on these sweet Niv-Mizzet lists?
Well, Damon, I'm wondering which of these shells do you think is like the most likely to be like competitive long term?
I mean, I think the 5-color control one seems like it has a lot of flexibility. Whereas like the creature based lists, just creatures by themselves tend to be more aggressive in a sense. It's hard to build a creature control deck somehow. And the weirder the mana base is, and the fact you're trying to win the game with a 5-mana spell means that the aggression isn't quite as important as just stabilizing and then getting your Niv out. And Modern hasn't really seen a good 5-color control deck in a long time, as far as I know, maybe ever. And so I'm most excited about the 5-color control one. But the creature-based ones, I honestly will have to try them. I haven't played a game with one yet. They look interesting.
And I will say, this is the kind of card that does get better every time they print a new set, right? They're going to print more and more cards that are two colors. So the variety of cards that can be played in the lower mana costs that Niv-Mizzet can hit, that's always going to go up. It's never going to go down, right? Unless they ban Mana Morphos or something. So like the new Negate that's blue-white, that's uncounterable. Okay, all of a sudden that's a new tool, etc. So each set could add, you know, feasibly one or two cards to the sideboard or main deck, depending on how you want to build the list. So this is something that rewards iteration, I think, that rewards picking one or two, you know, certain cards. You're going to find that card in a reasonable amount of games because you are playing four Bring to Light in some of the shells we're proposing.
Yeah, that's a great point, Dave. I think that, like, this concept already works with the tools we have, but I firmly believe we're going to be seeing better gold cards in the future, possibly even in Modern Horizons. I have my eye on. I'm hoping for Gerard's Verdict. I know you're hoping for Vindicate. Those will be able to be perfect cards for this kind of deck. And just like every set, they always print good something. There's always some new tool. So if you're at all interested in this kind of list, I just friendly advice to pick up some Nivs now. They are extremely cheap. They are like bulk mythic prices. So might as well get a playset so they can't go any lower.
And I mean, we're just going to keep posting 5-0s until that, you know, we can start paying off college debt. So that's just how it's going to go down. You guys can make the call.
Okay, in terms of what list we want to play, I'm really torn because I like all of these lists and I almost want to like explore multiple avenues at once. What do you guys think? Like, should we pick one to focus on or should we try a couple different routes?
I don't think the creature heavy one that doesn't have the gold colored Niv-Mizzet creature one, I think is my least favorite.
So that's the one that's almost more like a Rainbow Hate Bears kind of strategy with like the Sculler.
Yeah.
That's the Ancient Ziggurat mana base.
Or maybe I like the shell. I just don't like some of the choices. Like, I don't like Tajik in a deck that is trying to not die. Because I do think your point that the best deck that takes advantage of a 5-drop that draws 4 cards is a deck that's not trying to win the game before then. It's a deck that's trying to not die. So playing a 3-2 haste for 3 is not something I'm interested in.
Yeah, he was the only Boros.
Dave, have you ever mentioned that to a Tidehauler Scholar?
I haven't. I'll be honest.
Well, I have.
I don't want to say. I should knock it until I've tried it. But
that's 6 damage on turn 3.
Yeah, I mean that's too good. Hopefully, they don't have a lightning bolt in their deck or.
The gold color Niv-Mizzet deck actually looks pretty fun to me. It's just like a bunch of just random gold creatures plus, you know, your Niv-Mizzet Overlord to rule them all once you get to 5 mana.
And I know you're joking, Dave, but Tajik actually protects your Sculler from a lightning bolt, which is kind of why I like him in that situation. Like, he protects the Sculler, and like, yeah, he's not a hater himself, but you know, the cards, like, you know, I consider maybe Meddling Mage is good for that deck. Sculler, Knight of Autumn, like Fulminator Mage. Like, these are cards that you could cast in a sort of rainbow Ancient Ziggurat, Pillar of the Parents mana base. That, you know, they can be extremely strong against certain decks.
Yeah, so I'm liking a lot of the cards listed there instead of Tajik, maybe. So that's maybe, I just don't like Tajik. That's maybe what it is.
Find me another Boros card and we can take Tajik out.
Just play Lightning Helix.
Oh, okay, well, but then you can't cast it off. Okay, so that's the question I have for that deck, is the Ziggurat too much of a problem?
I'm notoriously poor at building mana bases, so that's the other thing, is this mana base, like, scares the shit out of me. It looks like something I built for, like, a casual deck and then immediately discard, like, 2 games in, just, like, so frustrated. If someone has, like, run the numbers or played games and said, all right, you'll be able to cast your spells on time, man, don't worry about it, and there's some tiny percentage of the time that's not true, I guess I can live with that, but there's just a lot of... Now, I didn't propose a mana base for the other list, so maybe it's the case that they're all going to have their own struggles, but I was impressed with the mana base you constructed for your spells list, and I think needing to fetch along certain color lines is probably crucial for consistency, but...
Yeah, I think I'm going to call that one the Safe Right Quest mana base. And it has that steam vents problem that Damon was describing.
Yes.
So that's a question I think we'll have to keep in mind as we go forward. Like, is that an actual problem or not?
So yeah, I wonder if FedEx mana base. I actually really drew Safe Right Quest early. I just cast it after off of a Niv-Mizzet, and the mana base actually still felt pretty good. It was able to basically mostly fetch what you want. Occasionally, if you wanted a double spell, missing a steam vents would be tricky. And this gold color Niv-Mizzet list we have actually has a lot of trouble casting anything that isn't a multicolored creature.
Yes.
And that's going to seriously impact the sideboarding plan, it would feel. But if all we want to do is jam multicolored creatures, then no problem.
Yeah, that list, I threw it together actually and tried out some games, and I had some trouble casting. Like, I had a couple Bring to Lights in there. And those were just a little bit awkward, more than a little bit awkward with the Ziggurats.
And I do think some amount of Bring Delights, I don't know if it's four, but some amount of Bring Delights is pretty key to the sort of Niv-Mizzet is inevitable kind of vibe that we're wanting.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. So I want to maybe, build a mana base that allows us to cast Bring Delight. Or go the Neoform route. Maybe if we're doing a Ziggurat mana base, we would just not worry about Bring to Light and just try to cast the 2-mana version of a spell that finds him. So
yeah, I think they're all worthy of trying out. You know, it's so new, it's so different from how people are thinking about building decks in Modern that we don't have a lot of precursors that we can. All right, at least we've got this shell. That's whatever. We're switching 20 cards. I mean. There's, as Damon says, there hasn't really been a 5-color deck in Modern for a long time. No one's been trying to resolve a 5-mana creature that draws you 4.5 cards. No one's trying to find certain percentages.
Tide Hollow Sculler.
Yeah, nobody's trying to find like certain percentages of certain guilds. So, I mean, there's just a lot of room to explore. And I think this is just, it's the kind of card that just, it inspires a brewer inside of you. It brings out that kind of like, what's possible. Everything seems possible in a certain way.
Yeah, I'm excited. So
we'll be back next week. In addition to our already 5-0, we'll hopefully have a couple more, or at least some successful testing, find out what we like and don't like, and maybe we'll recommend a few other directions to try out, and then we'll have some new lists built around some new cards to talk about.
Great. See you next time.
Alright, take care.
See you guys next time.
So that'll do it for episode 2 of the Faithless Brewing Podcast. As a reminder, all of the lists that we discussed on today's episode are posted from our Twitter account at FaithlessMTG and on the Modern subreddit r/ModernMagic. If you like what you heard today, you can help us out by helping spread the word, tell a friend, and give us your feedback. Let us know how we can make this show even better. We hope you'll join us next week. We'll have a brand new episode. We'll tell you all about our testing with Niv-Mizzet Reborn, and we'll have a brand new set of decks built around another War of the Spark card that I can't wait to tell you about next week. We hope to see you then.